think quite simply, specialty coffee, what it means is good coffee. And the majority of coffee is still overwhelmingly bad. What is a coffee shop? What is it there for? It's to ultimately try and improve the quality of people's days.
This is One on One, a Table for Two production. I am Antoine Aboussamra.
As a customer, you want to, and me as a customer, I want an experience. Otherwise, I'd stay at home and do it myself, right? Badly, but that's what we want. We want the experience, and that experience is social as well. But that social experience is entertainment in its very, very, in a very loose form.
In every episode, I invite you to hear the stories of people in the world of food who are on a mission to protect the environment, defend their cultures, or fight for more social and economic justice. One on One will help you see the world in a different way.
You're surrounded by people and you're feeling lonely in a sea of people because of the atomization of the of society. I think, quite simply, we have to spell out what we do and why we do it. I think we have to market ourselves as that. It's like as an anti-loneliness cure.
Good afternoon. It's a fantastic pleasure to be back for a new episode of the One on One podcast. And today I have the pleasure, honor, and privilege to welcome again Shana Galhenage, the owner and head barista, can we say that as well, of Café Loustic in the 3rd arrondissement of Paris. And we won't go through the whole history of Café Loustic and Shana's story of how he got into coffee. I'll put in the show notes the first interview we done about 3 years ago, almost to the date, where he goes over, you know, the whole story. Absolutely fascinating. So happy 10th anniversary.
Thank you, Antoine. It's my pleasure to be back here after 3 years.
Time flies.
That's right. That's right. But so much has happened and it's almost surreal now.
So you survived COVID. The business went through.
Yes.
And you were, before we were talking, before starting the conversation now, we were talking about what happened in the past few years, etc. And you said that, funnily enough, it was COVID time were easier than what happened afterwards.
That's right. It was always like, because we were being paid to close... The analogy I made was like, it was like musical chairs, you know, the music was playing and we were paid to stay at home. And as I was saying, it was like, somebody said, this is the closest you're going to get to retirement. And so that part was the easy part. What followed was the difficult part when the music stopped and you had to find a chair.
Yes. Okay?
Because we reopened, but the context had changed. People were still scared of going out and mingling with other people. The tourists, this is about cafes in the center of Paris, the tourists weren't back at all. Not only that, to travel, you needed to get expensive PCR testing, mm-hmm. which was a hindrance, you know, and added an added budget to traveling as well, and added inconvenience. So people just stayed at home. So the aftermath of COVID was certainly a lot more difficult, and we're still living that to this day.
Yeah. So now basically the COVID thing is almost over. Now you have the strikes.
That's business as usual. yes, that's right. The permanent ferment, revolutionary ferment that we know and love in Paris and in France, which is, at least we forget, the only Western country to have had a popular revolution and is in the blood of the people. And there's nothing, the national sport is permanent contestation with the government. Okay. So revolutionary ferment is the national sport.
And during the striking days, how was business?
Recently, it's been better during the strike days, ironically, for some unknown reason. But yeah, I mean, the strike days early on, I think we've had about 9 or 10 strike days this year. And the early ones, of course, they were sort of midwinter. They dropped off, but you shrug your shoulders. You lose money, you pick yourself up and you dust yourself off and you get on with it, because that's what entrepreneur life is. Okay. This is just there are things that happen like that and you get through it. But recently it's been getting better. People are better prepared. And this is compared to before COVID, the strikes that happened before then, you know, which are 3.5 years ago, people are better prepared. They're home working or remote working or working on your computer and having meetings is far more established mm-hmm. than then before the first lockdown. Zoom, as the meetings have just become very, very normal. People have electric bikes now, a lot more, and a lot more mobility compared to 2019. So they're getting to work. They don't have to rely on the metro, for example. So these are some of the changes. So the strikes haven't affected us so much now.
Have you seen a change in the people that were coming to the cafe?
I think there's always a change. I think there's always a change, and it changes depending on the season as well. If you like the profile of the people coming now, the one major change is that we used to have a lot of meetings, work meetings between 5 and 6, and we used to close at 6.
Mm-hmm.
We close at 5:30 because those meetings are over. There's no face-to-face meetings; it's all done by Zoom. It seems like there's never 100% of the workforce at the office. So if they're having a meeting between 5 and 6 p.m., it's going to be at the office because it's going to be on Zoom. There's going to be those present plus the Zoom.
Okay.
That's the major change. As far as the tourists are concerned, to Paris right now, with the high dollar, the low euro, which is almost at parity, it's never been cheaper for Americans to visit France. And of course, France will remain a top destination. This past year, the profile of tourists has been, I would say, up to 90% have been American.
Ooh.
And of course, they're getting Paris at a bargain. You know, for example, if you pay $18 for a glass of wine in New York or San Francisco, and you're paying $7 here, right? I mean, it's a no-brainer because, as I say, I really do think that Paris has the best quality and price of any major brand city in the world.
There was something you were talking about, that the people are meeting less face-to-face and they are doing things over Zoom.
Yeah.
There's a big change in the social aspect of the interaction between people. You open a cafe, yes. Very specifically. It has a specific term. It has a specific meaning. There's a social, you know, the social impact of what a cafe means. That cafe culture, you think it's getting lost as we go through the years now?
Good question. I don't think it's getting lost. No, I think human beings have a need to meet each other, relate to each other, connect to each other, and all that. But I think it's just becoming more infrequent for whatever reason. I think our lives are becoming more atomized now. Maybe are we going through an elliptical sort of path or a circle where, you know, you have your meetings on Zoom, you date using an app, you don't go to the cinema anymore. You go to, you know, you watch movies on your computer. You can even brew good coffee or better coffee at home now, right? People have learned.
But not as good as at Lustig.
No, that's the thing. It's not as good, right? As a coffee shop, as a barista who's a trained professional to do it. Of course, people say that, but it's better than it was. It's better than, you know, Nespresso or something like that, you know? But so I'm saying, so I think all this is contributing to the atomization or the fragmentation or the inconsistency of patronage at coffee shops, and also working from home as well, because they're just physically just not there, right? But I think people have the need to connect. And I think people are realizing now that they have a need to connect, because I think loneliness is there for sure.
What are your clients saying? That, oh, we missed that experience when they come to the cafe and they say, we missed that. Is it something that they realize now, as you were saying, that there's something that is missing?
I don't think anyone would openly admit it. And I've never heard the words.
Mm.
But as I say, Lustig is an amazing place for meeting people, because it's the way it's set up is like your living room, right? With like your drunken uncle, like running the show. You know? But as I say, the beauty and the biggest success that Lustig has had as a coffee shop, apart from the quality of our offering, which I do think is easily top 10 or top 5 in Paris for as far as coffees and quick service goes, is the fact that people do turn their heads and they talk to each other. And we see this every other day. And we've seen, always see complete strangers turn and their heads and talk to each other. And quite often they're busy doing something. They're on their computers or something, but they talk and for example, there may be a jazz musician who comes in and he sits there and he's just, in between two people. And he's just talking, he just turns his head and he'll have to start a conversation with one and then another. And they're very happy to interrupt their work to do that, actually. and you know, and talk to people about you know, about this and that, and then start a conversation on anything from Paris to jazz to, you know, to the fact, to this subject about interaction as well.
Yeah, and when it comes to jazz, definitely I can understand what conversation can go on and on for hours. Yeah,
especially with me, because I'm a huge jazz fan. But I think that, I think people aren't saying their words, but I think people are appreciating that. And I think there's nothing better than walking out of a out of a meeting or an encounter that's been enriching, especially from a stranger that hasn't been negative, right? Which in a coffee shop isn't you know, is rarely going to happen, unless, you know, unless there's some kind of dispute. But that's between clients, that's, you know, that's extremely rare, you know.
Yeah, usually they go in those places to, you know, to relax and have some quiet time and enjoy the brew.
That's right. They're either a lot of them these days are enjoying the coffee, or at the moment there are fewer coffee. It depends on the season, but there are fewer coffee tourists. They are there, but it's generally people settling down for, you know, to do some work or reading or work on a computer or meet friends. Right, that's still there.
What is it? Why is it so important to keep this coffee culture? Because, you know, you have the big chains and you can go and have the standardized product everywhere with the same super roasted, you know, burnt stuff, and not going to mention any names. And so why have that culture of coffee from those small coffee shops? Sorry. I just realized that I made a mistake, because we were talking just before.
It's not a mistake.
No, but you see how, okay, I'm going to explain what just happened. I said coffee shops, and a shop is usually a place where, as you were mentioning before, it's a place where you go and buy the stuff and you leave, while a cafe is a place where you stay and you interact with people. And we've been so ingrained, as you were explaining to me before, that the word shop has come so much into the lexicon that we don't realize the difference between the two.
That's correct. Yes, I think there's a distinction between a cafe and a shop. And that's not to, to put anyone down or demean anything. But I think it's important to me to stress what my cafe represents compared to a place where, because my place isn't a place where you queue up in a line. Right? And I'm not talking about the big chains here. I'm talking about, there are specialty coffee shops, including one that's 1 minute walk away from here, where there's a big queue. It's a big place, and you queue up and you take away your coffee, right? But it's specialty coffee, okay? And you don't meet anyone there. Right? You don't meet strangers there. You can organize meetings with your friends there, of course, but the place is just too big and busy. And the way it's designed is that you form a queue to get your thing. It's very much like an American type setup, I would say, right?
Okay.
You know, with the volume and all those sorts of things. Whereas mine is definitely focused on meetings and intimacy. But coming back to your question, is that why are small places still good? It's because, you know, I mean, it's the whole package. It's design, it's quality, and intimacy. And I think that's what people want. They want the experience. I mean, let's not forget, people, I think 3 years ago, I also said that when people ask me what I do in life, I always answer, I'm in the entertainment business, right? Because, you know, I don't say I'm in the restaurant business, I'm in the entertainment business, because that's the, you know, in a very, very broad sense, that's what it is, right? That's what you're, because as a customer, you want to, I want an experience, right? Otherwise, I'd stay at home and do it myself, right? Badly, but that's what we want. We want the experience, and that experience is social as well. But that social experience is entertainment in its very, very, in a very loose form. You want to be entertained by a fantastic experience.
And so the people, this is what they're getting when they come and get
Café du Steak. I think another intimate small places, and just seeing this, as I say, if you talk to somebody interesting, or you meet a good connection, like there was the other day, there's a very good client of mine who's a handbag designer, and she met an artist from New York there, and they're going to do a future collaboration together. I mean, you walk out of a meeting feeling better than when you walked in.
Definitely, right? On top of drinking coffee
with. the good coffee as the backdrop, yeah, fueled by a good quality product, because the experience wouldn't have been as embellished if you were drinking a bitter, poorly extracted coffee, for example. Do you see what I mean? It wouldn't have been if you had a bad product and a good meeting.
Yes,
it have been as good as a. It would have detracted from the experience rather than embellished the experience.
Definitely,
right.
You're 10 years old now. Did you see the scene change a lot since 2013?
Yes. It's. I mean, it hasn't been a boom time, but since COVID, we've seen a lot of investment and investors opening up specialty coffee chains in areas that were, especially in the west of Paris and the Left Bank, that weren't served at all, right? Because the specialty coffee movement is emblematic of gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to set up. It's cheaper to set up a coffee shop rather than a kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, I only needed just my equipment, my fridges and machine and all that, and total equipment cost €16,000. That's nothing compared to setting up a restaurant with a kitchen mm-hmm. in it. And some people have done that as well. But it's actually emblematic of a hospitality startup that it's actually quite cheap. You get cheap premises, and your clientele are, you know, live in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe a artistic or creative community. You know, that's why it's all concentrated around the 3rd, 10th, and 11th arrondissement in Paris, the coffee scene. But now they've gone further afield, right? And now you're starting to see Left Bank and West Paris now develop. But those places are much more expensive. That's not a gentrifying area at all. And so they've needed bigger investments. So we're starting to see funds coming in from the Middle East, for example. They're still French-owned. They're not Middle Eastern.
Yes.
So we're starting to see Middle Eastern money or Japanese money coming, or even there's a Brazilian as well. There's a place called The Coffee, which has a coffee chain. Percent Arabica, which is Japanese. They have lots of locations around the world. So these international and coffee investors are coming in now to Paris and have come in. And that's been the big change since COVID in the last 2 years.
So there's that importance of, you know, getting into the scene, as I was going to say. But eventually, why is it so important to keep the tradition of specialty coffee?
I think quite simply, specialty coffee, what it means is good coffee, right? And the majority of coffee is still overwhelmingly bad, right?
But people don't know.
Well, that's the thing.
They don't know that what they're having is bad.
They don't know. They do know, because they. The thing is, you won't know until you've tasted something better, right?
Yes.
But you don't. They don't have a point of comparison necessarily. They think that. See, here's the problem with coffee in France. Is that. My line is that people take coffee like a medicine here, right? It's not it's unlike wine, and it's paradoxical. They just think it's something to, you know, that you have to suffer and put a couple of sugars in. It's bitter. It's not particularly very nice, but it's there for the caffeine to wake you up. It's a medicine, right?
Yes.
It's not a fine product, okay? And this is what we're trying to fight. This is expanding, but expanding very slowly, right? Because it's not coming in on a clean slate like it did in the UK, for example, which doesn't come from a coffee culture. Mm. Southern Europe, Spain, Portugal, France, Italy have had over 100 years of espresso-based drinks since the invention of the espresso machine in Italy, right?
Yes.
Tradition and culture. So, you know, so where specialty coffee is rowing against the tide, the blends of the coffees are, instead of Arabica, Robusta, are... You know, they're different now. It's 100% Robusta. They're not used to 100% Arabica now. They're not used to the fruitiness or the tanginess.
What is strange is that it's the land of wine, and with all the terroir and all these, you know, the tasters and the winemakers and etc., they have that culture. And coffee is not that different, because you have the terroir and you have the provenance, the places where they've been grown, and the different taste and the different taste profiles, etc. I thought they would be interested for the intellectual purpose of what the coffee drinking would be.
That's an interesting point, and that's a very good point, because in actual fact, when I've done coffee events in wine growing regions like La Loire,
mm-hmm.
they've adapted to it much better than Paris.
Okay.
Here's the myth about France. It's like everyone thinks that Paris is the most sophisticated part of France, and in actual fact, it's not really. Right? But then if you're in a big city, people are, there's a certain element that they're very sophisticated.
Yes.
But I think the reality for a product like, here's the difference. coffee is considered as an FMCG, as we call it in jargon, which is a fast food consumer product. People want it quickly. But if they want to go into a fine dining restaurant, they have the time, and it's at night, right? During the day, people, it's a different mentality. People are more, people have less time. They're more rushed.
So how can you make people change their mind?
People are changing their mind because they're coming in at the times when they're available, which is lunchtime, especially the weekend. And they're trying, or they're being brought by somebody, introduced by somebody to this new product, or somebody's bringing it home. And that's how it's happening. But it's happened very slowly, right, in this country. France and Italy are very, very conservative old European countries, right? So things take time to change. People don't like the fruitiness in their coffee, and they don't understand why it's so fruity. They think you've added something to it, whereas you explain that it's actually the coffee cherry that is actually, you know, it's actually a coffee comes from a fruit, you know.
Would the younger generation be more open?
The younger generation is definitely more open, for sure. That's what we're finding. But also, it's also design-led as well in a certain way, because they're seeing the latte art as well. But they're seeing the places that are looking much more designed than the local bistro and brasserie and cafe, right? It's more design led. So that's what it is. But it's definitely a more urban phenomenon for sure.
So when you were talking about the entertainment aspect, it seems that what people would be looking at is everything except for the coffee to begin with. The place, the ambiance, where you're going to be sitting, how they're going to be exchanging with others, et cetera, et cetera. And then there is the, you know, the taste experience.
Correct. It's the total entertainment package, right? You know, it's the sensory package and entertainment package, you know? They want the design, they want the nice environment, they want the coziness, the hygge, as they say in Denmark, right? Yeah, the full sensory experience is what they want.
But this is hard.
It's not that hard. Is it hard? I don't know. Is it hard? I don't know.
How many cafes reached the 10-year anniversary in Paris?
Seven.
So you're telling me it's not hard?
Oh, it's hard, but it's not harder than, I think it just depends on your mentality. I think you ask all seven of us how hard it's been, and it's been hard as a business can be hard. But then if we're still here after 7 years, after 10 years, then obviously we've been lucky or better off than the others, or more astute, right? But I can tell you that out of the seven so far that have reached the 10 years, it's definitely Lustig and Café Lumi that have had the most difficult locations.
So your clientele is super faithful.
Yeah, I think we've worked hard. And I think certainly with those two, we've worked very hard, extremely hard, against the odds to attract a clientele, because we haven't had the natural advantage of a good location. Because for me personally, it's been very, I couldn't afford it, right? You know, it's just me that I don't have any business partners. It's just me. I might want to say, yes, it would be nice to have more money and this and that, but ultimately, I've survived. You have to also not forget the context of what's been happening in Paris since 2015.
Not easy, huh?
So we had Charlie Hebdo, the attack, which started this sort of downward spiral a little bit. That was in January of 2015. That was a shock, but it didn't have a major business impact beyond a couple of weeks. The thing that really spun things off its axis was the big terrorist attacks at the Bataclan and elsewhere on the 13th of November 2015. That was the one. That was the big one.
Yeah,
that was the big one. Okay, so that winter was a little bit affected by that. People were scared. There was an ambience, you know. There was a presence, terrorist attacks everywhere. You know,
I remember.
This is when ISIS was most active in the Middle East, and also in North Africa as well, in Africa as well. Let's not forget the then president François Hollande sent troops into the French army into the Sahel. You know. To help that, and of course that was to combat Islamism in those countries. Yeah. It sort of backfired a little bit. Yeah. It was definitely something. 6 months after, there was a personal event where after the terrorist attacks, there was a car that came through the front window of Lustig. Right, this is something I'm still being reminded of all around the world. So luckily there was nobody there. It was on Easter Sunday 2016, so that was a further difficulty. So we were closed for 3 weeks. We managed to have a we had So insurance bailed us out, but we had a false facade for 1 year, right? And it was ugly, but it was a large plank of wood with a hole cut in it for a window, right? And that was for 1 year, right? That was that. Then Macron got elected. And that year after he got elected, the 2017-18 was the best year ever for business. And that's when I set up Marseille. We all started new projects because of the optimism in the air. But then, of course, the following year, 2018, that came down with because of reforms and the strike started happening, which culminated in the at the end of the year with the Gilets Jaunes, the yellow movement with the petrol. And that's when things really hit the deck then again, and culminating in a 1 month blockade of the metro in December 2019. So it's 1 month without the metro, right? That was a big hit, December 19. And then March 20 was COVID and lockdown. So, you know, I mean, it's been, and it's not just us, it's in Paris, it's everywhere, but we've had more social unrest in general in the last, since 15, so it's almost 8 years, right? Then I would say than many other countries, certainly Western countries, you know?
How do you keep on?
You just have to master your costs. You have to advertise. You just have to keep your head down and work hard. And sometimes, you know, you have to work 7 days a week. As simple as that. In September and October of 2020, so let's not forget this was 7 years after opening, right? I worked every single day of those 2 months before we got locked down again. Every single day, right? 60 days. And it had a personal toll on me. It cost my relationship at that time. But I made that sacrifice to keep the business afloat, which in turn had to, because I have a mortgage on my apartment as well, it made me prevent me from losing those two things, you know?
Let me start the question again. How do you keep on?
I'm a natural optimist. Okay. I love life. Life is beautiful, right? Life is good. I'm also, you know, you have to remind yourself that I'm living in a privileged life in a privileged country, because the great majority of humanity, no matter how difficult it is here, it's nowhere near as difficult as it is elsewhere, right? It just isn't. And this is something that annoys me a little bit about people when they start moaning about how difficult life is here. The difference that we have, and they need to realize, is that the difference between a poor country and a rich country, in general, not everyone has this, and I realize that, is that we have choice. We have the freedom to change our lives, or more than somebody, a peasant stuck in Pakistan, for example, right? We're living in pretty much slavery, you know what I mean? We have more options to change. I'm not saying it's easy. It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. But how do I keep on? Just because I have, I think, inner strength. I love my life. I love what I do. I love being a barista. I love what I love the environment that I'm in. I love the social environment of what I do. So I think I'm lucky, and I think I have a survival instinct as well.
Yeah,
for sure.
Have you ever asked yourself why you got into all of this?
No, never.
So if you were to ask yourself,
I've never regretted it.
It's not a question of regret. It's just, there's a drive. You don't do what you do.
Because I love what I do. Simple as that.
And what is so enthralling?
And also, let's not forget, owning a business is to do with ego as well. It's your brand. It's you. It's an extension of you. Mm-hmm. It's a form of gratification, right? To see people coming in and you're walking around and meeting people, and you're somebody in this microcosm. Do you see what I mean? You know, this wasn't the guy who was working at a desk before that. Do you know what I mean? It's not the same thing. It's like you are somebody, and I think that's what it means to me. That's what I love it. That's what I love about it.
What is your biggest joy in your work?
My biggest joy is definitely seeing meeting interesting people, meeting fascinating people for sure, around the world. Going to coffee conferences, meeting people like yourself, meeting customers who are interesting, you know, as opposed to another workplace where you're all thrown together in an office, you have nothing in common, people are all very nice, but you have absolutely nothing in common, right? I think that's the difference. I think you have the I have the much more opportunity and to meet interesting people and make my life richer, travel to places, know about certain things that I would never have opportunities or things that I like to do that I would never have known had I not set up a business, right? Have the opportunity to visit, for example, coffee plantations, which I haven't done yet, but I will plan to do. For example, just get to know a little bit about life. I mean, know what's happening, restaurant openings, cultural openings, who's doing what in business, what's happening, contributing a little, I think a little drop to the scene in Paris. And let's not forget why are we here as well, right? What is a coffee shop, right? What is it there for? It's to try and improve the quality of people's days.
You think it has an impact?
Of course. Of course. Yeah, that's why we have customers. That's why we have, and that's why we've been there for 10 years. We're, in our own little way, improving the quality of people's day through the beverages or the contact that they're having at the cafe.
You were saying a bit earlier that people are connected all the time, and as we know, that the more connected we are, the more lonely we are. And cities are becoming places where that loneliness is, strangely, because there's so many people, but that loneliness is very prevalent. How can you change that approach to that social interaction? And what is the role of a Café Loustic, for instance, within how cities can now evolve? Because we've gone from a place where cities, you had your small neighborhoods, everybody was knowing everyone, you had all these little shops where people would go and talk to each other, etc., to a place that is much more structured, big chains, things fast, etc., etc. And now, is there something that's going to evolve from that? And if so, what would be the role of a Café Loustic within that? How a city can evolve, how Paris could evolve.
I think we have to market ourselves in what we do, right? And I think, as you touched on correctly, there's this paradox in cities now where, you're surrounded by people and you're feeling lonely in a sea of people, right? Because of the atomization of the of society. And I think, quite simply, we have to spell out what we do and why we do it. I think we have to market ourselves as that. It's like as an anti-loneliness cure, as a social cure, we have to actually say the words, because people aren't going to admit that they're lonely. People never admit they're lonely in public, right? It's seen as a weakness or a fault, right? And loneliness isn't having no friends, because that's not what it is in this context. That's quite rare in a city where you have no friends, unless unless you really don't have any friends. But loneliness is not being able to connect with people. That's what loneliness is, right? You might see the same people every day, but you might not be you might be dissatisfied. So we have to, I think, what some of the good media outlets now, and it's still very, very few, you have to spell out now what we're there for. And we say, yeah, we're a connection, we're a meeting point, we're a connection point where you can actually meet strangers. And that's what I actually do with my Instagram and social media, because that's the only outlet that I have to do it, is to say that, yeah, this is a place where strangers, you can turn your head and meet strangers. Only because I'm seeing the evidence every other day. Okay, so I think we have to answer your question. We have to spell it out. We have to actually say the words.
That's very important.
That's the only thing we can do. And I know that some one or two magazine editors have done that, have started to do that now, and talk about it. But it needs to be talked about. And I think that longevity will come from people waking up and admitting that they need to stop being atomized and go back into being social.
So important. Because at the end of the day, this is who we are. We're not made to be dealing with machines.
Correct.
I don't want to sound old school or something like that, but we're not made. They're great tools, but this is not the way we are made to live.
I don't think we're reinventing, or need there's nothing that's been to re that needs to be reinvented, right? When I hear about things like augmented reality, virtual reality, and all the artificial intelligence, first thing I think is, well, okay, cool, but what for? In certain contexts, in I mean, wearing a headset I mean, the most ridiculous thing is wearing a headset to be in augmented reality. But what's wrong with real reality? What's wrong with reality, right? Without the headset, you know what I mean? It's just, some people's minds are, technology minds are crazy. I mean, it's a sport to see how far you can go with that. Fine, but you know, to me, it doesn't serve any purpose. So I think, as I said, we're not reinventing anything. It's not a hippie idea. It's that we're human beings. We have needs.
True.
For some unknown reason, we're being estranged from those needs, you know, and it's not. We don't need to reinvent new ways of connecting, right? We just need to get. We need to just improve the old ways of doing it.
Yeah, because it's very simple. At the end of the day, it's just a conversation right. Around a cup of coffee.
That's right. I'm just trying to be nice, you know, to somebody. I think.
Yeah, but maybe people are not content with the simple things anymore. They want things that are more supposedly evolved, and you know, just like,
who knows? I can't personally relate to that. For example, I had a good 2-hour chat with a caviste, you know, a woman who set up a women only not women only, but her producers are wine producers are mostly women, right? For example, which is an interesting concept. I was talking to her about that, and we just end up. Yeah, you know, I just walked in. We didn't know each other. I just walked in. I'd heard about her, and we just struck up a 2-hour conversation, standing up in her boutique. You know, that sort of thing. You know, for example, just simple things. We're not reinventing anything. You know,
that's just, the way it's done.
Just talk to people and be nice. You know, it's what you learned in kindergarten, right?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Indeed. Yeah. We're getting close to the end of the conversation. Before that, and going to the people question, I have one last question.
Yes.
How do you see the future? Okay, let me rephrase to make it a bit simpler. How do you see the future for specialty coffee? That's on one side. And how do you see the future for Café Lustig?
I think this, for the first one's easy. It's in Paris, it's going to develop. I think specialty coffee is going to expand. I think we're going to get less, we're going to be more polarized now. We're going to get more, there's going to be more chains, more specialty chains. So the standard's going to come be compromised a little bit, and I think the high end is getting higher and very very expensive. So now some places are charging 15 to 20 euros for a filter, right?
Oof!
Because they're buying very expensive beans and they're going very very high end, and people are buying into this though. Would you believe some? Okay, it's not everywhere. So Café Lustig is a specialty neighborhood cafe. So we're not that kind of experience, right? Our filter is now about has gone up to 6, but I've hardly ever gone up to the prices. Café Lustig needs to expand. It needs to find a terrace now. The reality is it needs to move after 10 years. With global warming, everyone and COVID and all that, everyone wants to be outside. So I now need to find that spot, and I'm in the process of looking for that spot, but it's taking ages. I just need to be patient. The future of Café Lustig. We have our brand, we have our credibility. We have personality. We stand for something. We're not an anonymous. We're a cafe, not a shop. Mm. And you have a loudmouth owner, you know, with a lot of personality, I think, and quite headstrong views running the show, right? So love us or hate us. Hopefully, we won't bore you, because one of my favorite quotes is from, you know, Zelda Fitzgerald, who was married to F. Scott Fitzgerald. She says, "We were never bored because we were never being boring." Right, so that's my motto. And for the other question, where do I see the future of specialty coffee? Definitely automatic machines. And there are, I've at Kuchum Cafe, I tested and I've seen the next generation Swiss automatic machines, where you don't need the quality of the milk is amazing, that it foams. These are automatic machines.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of the extraction of the beans is amazing as well. So that's definitely going to happen. And I think the training baristas, I think baristas are going to become rare. But I think if this technology takes off, it's going to only improve. You're going to get a good coffee everywhere, from a service station to a hotel to a cafe, because the big problem is personnel, right? Yes. Can't retain and keep barista staff, and it's not it's mostly not very well paid.
Right.
But this is the important thing with technology, where it's going to happen. To get a decent cup of coffee anyway, it has to be, I think, automated, and that is the future, right? So that's the future of the industry. The future of the industry, sadly, is with climate change, is the decrease of the availability of Arabica, high quality Arabica coffee, because even at mountain slopes, there it's getting warmer.
Mm-hmm.
So Arabica is going to become a very, very expensive and a premium. And so this 20 euro filter is going to become 50, right? Maybe. But I think there's going to be there is and will be research and development into improving the quality of Robusta coffee.
A lot of things to look forward to then.
That's going to be the future.
Nice.
Those things are the major key issues at the time.
To be continued, definitely.
Certainly. Hopefully so now, not 3 years.
No. Now, before ending, as usual, the pivot questionnaire. So it's the first thing that comes to your mind. I don't remember what you answered the first time. So I will see. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is your favorite word?
I remember the last time as I answered this question, it was poufias, right? Which in French means somebody who's flapping around and being an idiot, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard to translate, actually, really.
Yes. Yes.
But it just sounds as stupid as it is.
Yes. What's your least favorite word?
Can I use two words?
You can do whatever you want.
Okay, a flat white.
Okay.
It's an atrocious. It's. I bitched about it on my blog as well. It's an atrocious way to name a coffee.
Yes, it is.
Me personally, it lacks class. I mean, I get. You know, people take it personally, but it's nothing personal, especially Southern Hemisphere people. But they because they take you know, because it comes from Australia and New Zealand, they're still disputing where it comes from. But especially in a place like Paris, which is old Europe as well. Yeah, it doesn't. I don't. Especially when it comes look flat white, you know, it becomes look Big Mac like Pulp Fiction.
No. Okay. What's your favorite virtue?
Loyalty.
What's your favorite quality in a woman?
Good question. I don't think it would change really from a woman to a man. Really, in a person, it would be. I mean, honesty. I think would say.
Okay, you know? So same thing for a favorite quality in a man.
It would be as a human rather than a, you know, I mean, a woman as a, it wouldn't change from being a romantic partner to just a friend to a gender type sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes. So this one, what coffee, let's put it this way, what coffee would you use to describe yourself?
Oh, the easiest thing to say would be Robusta.
That's a bit vague.
But that would be hard on myself. What coffee would I use to describe myself? I would say that I'd be a blend of
yes.
Equal parts Brazil and Panama. I'm really flattering myself with the Panama here because Panama has the nice, beautifully, you know, I'm talking about the best Panama Geisha Hartmann Fingers, you know, Finger Hartmann Estate, which, you know, tastes of frangipani. Is absolutely sublime class, you know. Probably nothing I'm probably associated with the coarseness and the chocolatey richness of a very good Brazil. So a bit earthy, a bit romantic. I think that would suit me as a tourist. But as I say, that's my self image. I'm just flattering myself here.
It's fine. Sounds like you can flatter as
must
much
be
as you
want. Robusta. Yeah.
What aroma or smell do you love?
I love a smell of coffee, of course. Good coffee, even bad coffee is okay. It can be okay if you're desperate. If you can pass the place, you know, it's all right. You know, I love the smell of jasmine, frangipani, floral smells. I love controversial. I love the smell of cigars because I smoke cigars.
Okay.
Right. Every time I walk past the street, even you know, when somebody's smoking, I get turned on by it. Yeah,
nice.
Not very PC, but it's the truth.
What is your favorite curse word?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's any. I don't think it's a. I don't think it's a mystery that it would probably be the F word in English and the P word in French.
Okay, you know? Fair enough. What sound or noise do you love?
I love the sound of a trumpet or somebody practicing a horn instrument in their in another apartment.
Yeah, but they're playing well, not learning.
Yeah, even practice. I don't know. I think anyone, if you get to see hear somebody practice something like that, they're going to be okay. Is my experience, right? You know, I love the sound of that. I love the sound of children laughing. I love the sound of babies being tickled. I love kids. So you know, I have a daughter as well. So I have, for example, things like that. I think, a nice, sexy female voice. Especially some, woman who's been smoking 20 cigarettes a day. I think that's pretty good. I like
Raspy
that
sound.
gravelly, raspy sound.
Yeah.
Kind of, singer sound. I like, I think I like these things, for example.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Well, right now, for example, the sound, the sirens of ambulances, for example. People not chewing their food properly in restaurants or in any social situation, I can't stand that.
What plant or animal would you like to be reincarnated in?
What plant would I be like to reincarnate as? I think aloe vera would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
A what? Sorry?
An aloe vera plant would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Yeah, nice. It
You know,
soothes.
or a cactus, As an animal, I think it would have to be like a winged animal, like a bird, because of the freedom. I mean, what a life.
Yes.
I think a bird would be a pretty charmed life. I mean, some people would say trees as well because they see a lot of things, but the scene come, but that's a passive way of looking at things. So I'd have to be opposite of a tree. I'd have to be a bird for sure.
And last, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Your coffee's ready.
Shana Galhenage, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Antoine. It's been my pleasure.